This is Lisa K. Miller for the Western Kentucky University Libraries Oral History Project. Today is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013, and we are in Bowling Green, Kentucky at the Helm Library, speaking with Ann Brown. Ann, can you start by telling us a little about your background, where you were born, and what brought you to Western?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and my husband got his first teaching job, first and only teaching job here. He was hired in 66, and we've been here ever since. In 74, I began working in the library.
In 1974, in what department?
It was called cataloging then.
And what did you do there?
I was a proofreader.
Ah, tell us about that.
ATS operators keyed in information on books, and I would proofread it to see that it was correctly, you know, spelling was correct, and information was where it should be. And
so the ATS operators, those were the typists who were typing the catalog cards?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and this was during, was this during or before Operation Reclass?
Well, there must have been a it would have been after, I guess it were two reclass, maybe. It had already gone to Library of Congress when I started. But I guess there had been a reclass in 68 or 69, maybe.
Okay, that was the one where they went from the
Dewey Decimal
to Library of Congress. And this was the one where they were automating to a computerized system.
Yeah.
So all these many, many cards had to be. So you were taking cards from the card catalog?
No. I was, the ATS operators made printouts on computer paper. And we would go to the computer center and pick up the printouts, and then I would proof them.
So you were proofing from the printouts?
Yeah.
Okay.
That seems so long ago.
And then after you proofed them, what happened?
I guess it was, and I don't know the name, I'm not very technologically minded, I guess. I cannot remember what the system was they were using then.
That's okay.
But the computer center generated labels to go on the books. And so we would sit, several of us would sit at a long table, and one person would put the pocket in, one would put a spine label on.
You had the production line.
Production line, yeah. Not fun.
So how long did you work on that project? Or did you have that job?
As long as it existed. I cannot remember.
So was that the only position you had here?
Yeah, at that time, yeah.
Proofreader? Proofreader. But you just retired a few years ago.
Oh, no, I was. Okay. I did many different things.
Okay, so what did you do after that?
I keyed in information from books and did standard, what was called standard cataloging. And
was that original or copy cataloging?
It was copy cataloging.
Okay.
And then we used to file, then the index cards were, I guess, printed at the computer center. And so we used to have to file those index cards in the card catalog on fourth floor.
And the fourth floor, describe what the fourth floor looked like at that time. It looks very different now, right?
Very, very different.
Yes.
Just the standard card catalog boxes. There was a checker station where people checked out books. They had to go through the checker station, and the checkers would open their backpacks and
checkers were humans.
Yes.
There were people.
Right.
Right.
And
how many would you estimate?
Oh, I couldn't.
Cabinets of card catalog were up there.
Well, I'm not very good with estimating numbers. It wasn't it was a relatively small area, mm-hmm. I guess.
And reserves was up there.
Yeah.
At that time. So it was the circulation desk and reserves and the card catalog.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
On the fourth floor of Cravens. So describe how the filing went. Somebody would file on top of the rod.
Yeah. And then I guess that was one of the people who would go back and lower the cards if they were in the right place. And if they weren't in the right place, I put them in the right place.
So usually a student worker or a clerk would do the initial filing, and there was a rod that went through a hole in the bottom of all the cards.
Right.
I'm explaining this for the record. We both know what it is. And the students would put them, hopefully, in order on top.
Yeah. I mean, I guess occasionally maybe we put them in on top, too, uh-huh. but then eventually
somebody else would check them.
Yeah.
And so if they checked them and they were all in the right place, then you would pull the rod out,
and
drop all the cards down, and
put the rod back.
Put the rod back in so they were all locked in there and nobody could take them out after that. Yes. What other things did you do in your job?
Well, in 1980... I was put in charge of a relabeling project.
Relabeling.
And the computer center generated all the spine labels and the labels that went in the books. I think there were four labels per book, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of student assistants who did a lot of the work. I did the work, too, but... they would go through and start at the top on a shelf and just take each book down and see if it matched the next label in the file.
Mm-hmm.
And if it did, they'd take those labels out and put them on and turn the book down or up, whatever indicated that they were finished.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was the reason we did relabeling?
I guess the labels were old and hard to read.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that was partially it, I'm sure.
So it just
And in some cases, call numbers had changed.
Uh-huh.
And it was a way of updating.
Mm-hmm. So it was replacing the old labels so that they were more readable.
Readable.
And in some cases, a different call
number. Yeah, right.
Okay. And who was the director at the time you were hired?
Dr. Wasson.
Mm-hmm. And your department head?
Well, when I was hired, Sally Koenig was our unit head.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I know her. Her husband taught in math up here for years. Eunice Wells was department head.
Eunice Wells was the head of
technical services.
And her husband taught math?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Carol.
And who else did you work with that is no longer here? That you remember, either no longer
lots
working
of
here. Okay, tell us about some of those people
that are not here at the moment. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I guess Sally Ann's not really here anymore. I think she was when she left Craven. She went to the Kentucky Building and worked down there. But I think she's retired from that.
Yes.
Um, Nada Durham retired from third floor,
mm-hmm.
and is now in government documents. You knew that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of people who came, and I have no idea where they are now. Mm-hmm. Judith Morton, Paul.
Judith Morton?
Morton, M-O-R-T-O-N.
And did she work in technical services?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Paul Riley. Technical services.
Okay. And do you remember what their jobs were?
They were both professional librarians, so mm-hmm. they were, I think Paul was head of serials, or at least worked in serials at the time, and Judith was in cataloging.
Mm-hmm. And I know you didn't work with her because you're not nearly old enough, but do you know any stories about Margie Helm?
No.
Who was our director for many years.
I know
who
you're talking about, but no, mm-hmm. I don't.
You said you had a friend who was...
Your
aunt.
Was a student assistant when she was head of the library here.
And what's your aunt's name?
Sarah Johnson. And she just turned 98 years old.
Sarah Johnson was Margie Helm's student, one of her student
assistants. One of her student workers.
Do you remember anything she said about her?
I really don't.
Mm. And you came to Bowling Green in 66, so you came to the library in 74.
Right.
So the Cravens building had just been open about 3 years.
Yeah.
They opened in 71. Yeah. Do you know anything about the history of how that building got built?
Mm-hmm.
No. Do you know that there was a swimming pool there?
Yes.
Before.
Someone died there. Yes.
Yeah. And I haven't talked to anyone who knows that story. I was told it was the secretary of someone who worked in Helm.
I don't know who it was either, but when you talk to Nada, I think she'll know that.
Nada will know.
Yeah.
Somebody thought it might have been Sarah Tyler's secretary, who was the director after Margie Helm and before Dr. Wassum, but I haven't verified that yet. And it must have been in the 60s because that building wasn't there.
Yeah.
So we'll have to pursue that. And then we did have another tragic incident in Cravens in 1987 with Dr. Cudd.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't a doctor, John Cudd.
John Cudd, yes.
So what do you
know
about
that? He was humanities librarian.
Uh-huh. And what do you know about that?
Nothing. Except it happened. I mean, you know, I didn't see it.
What happened?
Well, he fell from the window.
Okay. He fell from the window in his office.
Right.
And opinion is divided as to whether
right.
he fell or jumped.
Yeah.
And even newspaper accounts differ. The report of the coroner to the Daily News and the Courier Journal give one each of those verdicts. I don't know if that means that he changed his mind or they did a very cursory investigation.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we may never know. Do you know anything about how the library staff responded after that?
Oh, that's been so long ago. And I really didn't... I mean, I knew who he was, but mm-hmm. I never really...
Was there a memorial service?
I don't remember one.
Okay. What was your favorite project you worked on?
Well, I don't know whether you call it a project or not, but I was on the Macnaughton Leisure Book Committee.
Oh, yes, I would call that a project, definitely. yes, and tell us about that.
I'm trying to think.
And we still have that collection
here.
Lease when your students are tired of reading history and chemistry, they can go and
read
a good murder mystery.
And,
or,
I mean, it's a very busy area.
Yes.
And we had a list where we could choose from, but if we wanted something that wasn't on that list, we could also request that. And they would get it for us if they could.
So what was the impetus behind getting this collection? Who started it?
I really don't know. Sally Ann Strickler was the first head of this project.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess Brian Kutz took it over from her. And he's had it for many years.
So somebody just decided there was a need for a collection like that.
Yeah, because the budget didn't allow for buying a lot of novels.
Right.
At least not contemporary novels.
So they...
And of course, we had some nonfiction too. It wasn't all fiction.
Yes. So we don't actually buy these books, we lease them. So we have a continuous, new, current collection of titles.
I would help Brian for several years weed the collection when it got too large.
Uh-huh.
And we would pull things off and look at it. And if it hadn't been checked out ever, then we'd send it back. If it had been checked out a lot, we would put it in the collection.
Right.
And...
You would add it to the regular collection.
Add it to the regular collection.
I've often wondered that. How come some of those books wind up in the the stacks? Okay. Yeah. So we figure if it's that popular, we'll keep it.
Yeah, right.
I see. Okay. And that's something a lot of people don't understand, I think, is that if you have a book that doesn't circulate, it's taking up valuable space. And that shelf space costs money.
Right.
And it's like renting an apartment.
Yeah,
If nobody's paying rent, they need to find somebody else.
Right.
So weeding the collection is really important. It's just as important as collection development, I think.
And then we had to go back after we decided what to keep and what to send back.
Mm-hmm.
That all had to be changed on the online
system. To go in and withdraw that title.
Withdraw.
Uh-huh.
And then if we kept it, we had to go back in and add our holdings to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
make it a permanent part of the collection.
Right.
So those books are... They are part of the online catalog, right?
Yeah.
They're in the catalog just like everything else.
Sure.
It just shows at a different location.
Right.
Okay. So that's just some... Even though we have a very nice public library right down State Street...
Yeah, we do.
...that offer, their whole collection is for things like that, I think that reflects the service orientation of this library and indeed this campus, that we say, you know what, maybe we could just have a little collection here for our students so they don't have to walk down the hill and up again to get a popular
book. Oh, it was a very popular collection.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it still is.
I mean, yeah.
And we have audio books as well now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Added to it. Anything else, because you were in technical services, what are the major technological innovations that you witnessed in your years here?
Oh, goodness.
Aside from the computer cards and Operation Reclass, what about getting... I heard that some people had computers on their desk before they had a phone.
Oh, really? What I remember best about phones was that for years after I came, four of us shared a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can imagine what a problem that was.
Yeah, so the phone would be on like a central desk,
uh-huh.
and then somebody would answer it and they
would
say...
Well, I think maybe we all had phones on our desk.
Uh-huh. But there was only one line?
There was only one line, yeah.
Uh-huh. Young people listening to this won't know what a party line was.
No, they won't. But I remember.
I remember, too. We had one when I was little. It was when, especially in rural areas, when they were just bringing phone lines out to some people, it was more expensive if you had your own dedicated phone line.
Oh, yeah.
So most people got party lines. So you shared it. And if you picked up the phone and you heard somebody else talking, you were supposed to put it down.
Yeah.
But a lot of people use that for their entertainment.
I'm sure.
In the country. So, yeah, I'm sure people today cannot conceive
of
that.
And I think maybe you had different rings for different numbers.
Oh, is that right? I've forgotten that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that that was always true.
So you could tell if it was for...
Yeah, you knew which party it was for.
So we had ringtones even back then. We just didn't call them that. I had forgotten that part of it, but I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
So you would know that it wasn't for you.
It would be for somebody across the street
or whatever. Pick up the phone, yeah. So we had to do a sharing, too, and... Connie Foster, who's our dean now, she was also in technical services, talked about the dedicated terminals that they got from the vendors. And because so many people needed to do work on those, they had to sign up for, you know, or she would assign people time.
Yeah, I remember that. And you signed up for a time that you thought would suit your needs. And, you know, if became inconvenient, you could generally switch. But
and she said that was really sort of how they developed flex time down there too, because everybody couldn't get to them in 8 hours.
Right.
So some people would come in earlier, some people would stay late, and in order to maximize the usage of those. Yeah.
I think the biggest flex time that I can remember was either 30 minutes to an hour. You know, people would come in either an hour earlier and work an hour late, or come in 30 minutes early and work 30 minutes late or something.
And that was, what system was that? Do you remember? Or which vendor it was? Was it for OCLC or for the online catalog?
Golly, I don't know.
I think she told me, actually, but I can't remember either. I know we had, we've got Voyager now. Before that, we had Notice. Do you know what we had before Notice?
If you mentioned it, I'm sure it would be familiar, but
anything else you can think of technology-wise that you witnessed or you had to...
Well, in the beginning, when I first came and started, when I first started cataloging, we had the, what were those books called? Huge...
National Union catalog.
National Union catalog,
yes,
where we had to search, and you'd have to take a magnifying glass to read it.
I know, I remember that in library school, going, people read this?
And then you copy it, I guess, and cut it out and put it on a 3x5 index card to go in the catalog downstairs.
So that was the... a database in print, really, was a database of all the books that were published. So when if you bought that book, you would look it up in there, and it had all the cataloging information for you. So you would actually photocopy the page, cut out.
And sometimes tracings had changed word-wise, so you would have to make corrections from a former tracing to a more up-to-date.
Tracing means subject heading?
Yeah, either that or part of the subject heading.
Okay. I hadn't heard that term before. Subject heading. So, yeah, they do change sometimes, the subject headings.
And some things were changed from abbreviations to not at all, or abbreviations to another form of abbreviation. It was...
Do you remember the early days of OCLC, which is what we use now for cataloging and interlibrary loan?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Better than it had been.
Easier than the National Union catalog.
Yes, anything would have been better than that.
Right. So describe what you would do when you used OCLC.
Well, we would call it up on the computer and... how did we call it up? I'm trying to think.
Did you search by title, or I know there's an OCLC number now, but I don't know that there was always. There are a lot of numbers.
I can't even think
system.
What I was doing toward the end.
Uh-huh.
and I enjoyed it. I just I've gone blank.
But that's typically what we use for what we call copy cataloging. If another library, usually the Library of Congress, has already received and cataloged the book. They put the record on OCLC. And then sometimes we would have to do original cataloging in-house if it were if we were the first ones to get the
book.
And I suppose a lot of those would be locally published things, things published by Western, at Western. So who did the original cataloging?
You had to have an accredited, well, this you may not want to hear all this. I decided that I wanted to get my master's, and everybody encouraged me to do that. Oh, yeah, get your master's. You can be a professional librarian. You know, it'll be great.
Yeah.
So I started my master's in 76, I guess. 76 or 77. And I took one class per semester until I finished. So I think I graduated in August of 80. And by the time I graduated, Western was no longer hiring its own graduates. So
you got the master's.
I got the master's degree, but it didn't earn me an extra dime.
Because Western's master's degree was not accredited.
Was not accredited. And according to the library science department head, and I guess a few others, it was largely a political thing. UK had an accredited program, and Peabody had an accredited program.
Peabody in Nashville.
In Nashville. It's Vandy, part of Vandy now, I guess.
Yes.
So they really didn't see the need. Plus, I think a large number of people in the library science program here hope to go into elementary schools, high schools.
Right.
And so the academic library, you had to really be kind of creative in order to get enough classes to fit that. But I did it, and I don't think I ever had to take a class that I really didn't want. And
so you could not move up here as a librarian with the degree offered by this university. It is sort of sad. Even though it's not the college who grants the, it's the American Library Association.
Oh yeah, right, right.
Accredits the program. But you think that maybe undue influence was placed on the ALA committee by UK and Peabody? That they didn't want the competition?
I don't know whether they didn't want the competition or Western.
They thought we would flood the market with too many graduates.
Yeah. I don't know.
Accredited. Well, that's unfortunate because I know we have an excellent library media education program and excellent faculty down there, and they do train a lot of school librarians, and that works out very nicely.
Well, I understand that even the public library here may not hire a librarian, quote unquote, without an accredited degree. So
that's pretty much the standard these days. So,
I mean, I know several people did go to Peabody, and they would go like one night a week or a weekend session.
Before online learning.
But I had a small child at home then.
Yes.
And another child, and it just didn't, that wasn't in my cards.
What about some major, as far as building or projects, improvements, renovations that went on while you were here?
There were lots of changes. The graduate school office was on first floor of this building, or on first floor Cravens, for a while. And I think there was an occasional faculty member from elsewhere who maybe had an office somewhere in the building.
Yeah, I heard the second floor of Cravens, actually Dr. Cravens told me this in his interview, that the second floor of Cravens, where is we now have our visual and performing arts library, was made available as office space to people who were on sabbatical. So they could come over here and be in the library close to the
library. And Career Services had the whole second floor.
And Career Services.
At one time. And
So it's always been a multi-use building,
yeah.
Really.
Uh-huh. I think they're fast running out of space now, though.
And do you remember when they had each floor of Cravens above the fourth floor was dedicated to humanities?
Humanities, uh-huh. Government services,
yes.
History.
Uh-huh.
It had to be something else.
Social although
there was had a science library,
uh-huh.
But they had science materials in Cravens as well.
And but the subject specialist for that floor lived on that
lived
floor.
Lived on that floor.
Right. So she
and
was
I guess
there.
Ordered the books for that floor
and
that kind of thing.
They had a small reference collection there, so she or he would answer. So you could, as a student, that would be very convenient. You go up there, all your books are there, your reference library's there. And then they centralized reference when they had decided they ran out of room. They couldn't really do it that way anymore because the collection was growing. So they just put it in straight LC order, and reference services were centralized and on the first floor of Helm. And, people, some people think that's, it's an improvement when you change something. Some people are very resistant to change because they were comfortable with the way it was. I heard a story about Peggy Wright being on the fifth floor.
Yeah, she was on the fifth floor.
On the floor. She didn't have an office. She didn't have a phone. She had a desk and a chair. Do you know that story?
No, I wonder if that was when she first came.
I'm not sure.
And I don't know when she first came.
It was a long time ago. But the lady upstairs on the sixth floor, if Peggy had a phone call, she lowered a brick out the window. This is when the windows still open.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Our windows don't open anymore.
No.
She would open a brick with a note on it that said, ring, ring, which means you've got a phone call, Peggy. So she would go up and take
her
phone
wild.
Call.
Yes. No, I've never heard that.
Yeah, so, several people have told me they had computers before they had phone on their desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we thought it was a great day when the staff downstairs got their individual computers.
Yeah.
You know, instead of sharing computers that were kind of out in the middle of the floor and signing up and making sure that you were there when you were supposed to be.
Do you remember when that was? Was it maybe early 80s, mid-80s?
I would say the mid-80s. I would say maybe mid-80s, yeah.
I imagine that created a great deal more harmony.
Oh, yes.
You didn't feel like you were in competition for computer time with your colleagues.
And I can remember when they were first training us on the use of the computers that everybody was encouraged to play solitaire to get familiar with.
Really? So initial computer training, including play solitaire. That's probably true because you would have to use the mouse
get
your hand-eye coordination going.
Yeah.
That's probably
good. Oh, Rose Davis is another. Uh-huh. She could give you a lot of information. Do you have her name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to her. She told me a lot about the Operation Reclass and all that. And did you have formal training? Like, did some of the reps or the vendors send their own trainers here to train the whole staff, or did you do a lot of in-house training?
I think it was mostly in-house, but I think we did have some people come in, I don't know, maybe just for a workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from what I remember of the 80s and 90s, it was just conference after workshop after training everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was online training and they would send you discs and they would come to the conference and it was because it all happened so fast.
Yeah.
And if you did not stay up to speed, it's like being on a treadmill, it keeps speeding up. If you don't keep up the speed, you will fall off. That's how rapid it has advanced. I've talked to a few people who left the profession briefly to have children or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it came back after, you know, not a decade, but several years, and it was very difficult to get back in
the
swim of things
because
you blink and everything's different.
I know.
It's not so much like that today. It seems like it's kind of
leveled off.
Not that it doesn't change still, but it seems like it's a little more manageable.
Yeah.
The platforms aren't changing every day. And,
yeah.
A little easier to keep up with. What was one of your most memorable events that either happened to you or that you witnessed, something that just, you know, personally made it memorable
this
for you?
This is just a funny thing.
Good.
Juanita Farnsley was a staff cataloger.
Mm-hmm.
And on her birthday, it was not for her birthday. It was for Doris Hardcastle's birthday. They had Miss Piggy come. And
Miss Piggy.
Miss Piggy. I don't know, now I don't remember whether that was somebody that worked with Broadway the Clown or...
Broadway the Clown. I remember him.
Yeah.
He was a local.
Yeah. He's still doing that, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
I know he did children's parties and things like that. Yes. So she dressed up.
So Miss Piggy came and dressed up and you know, came down on the floor and wished Doris a happy birthday. And
did she sing?
I think she did. And then I can remember, well, we always, or I didn't, but those who wanted to, dressed up at Halloween.
Yes.
And Juanita had a big bird costume that she used to wear.
I heard that that Halloween was really a big thing in the library, that everybody got into it. Most people dressed up. It was just really, really festive. You put candy out for students. And it's not really like that anymore.
No. Yeah. Well, they had a Halloween party, I think the last Halloween I was here. And it might have been a potluck, you know, mm-hmm. everybody gathered in room 111, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Halloween costume thing, you know, a first prize winner and a second and third, I think.
Mm-hmm. The costume contest. But it's just not like the big deal that it used anymore. And I've talked with a few other people about the effect that technology has had on social patterns in the library. So now they've got their own computer, they've got their own phone, and they're on that all day doing whatever it is they need. And we don't have to walk paper around so much. Which was a built-in social interaction, sort of like the old office of the water cooler thing. Yeah. You know, that's where you would gather and get the gossip. And we just don't have. It's been a lot of that has been taken away from us. So in order to socialize, you have to specifically plan to. You have to intend that to do that because you don't have to do it so much in the course of your normal activity. And that might be the reason why Halloween is kind of dropped off like that, because you're not...
Yeah.
You just don't have that closeness as a staff that you used to have. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
It's taken that. It's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to be mindful of that and make occasion for social interaction in order to...
It seemed
to
like on third floor, though, I don't think social interaction was ever a problem.
Yeah, because let's describe the layout of the third floor, because it's different from other places.
Well, catalog, what used to be cataloging is now Bib Access.
Mm-hmm.
And
but not everybody has an office.
Oh, no.
There's a big open workspace.
Oh, nearly everybody's in the open space.
Yeah, so that... is good.
That
there are no
lends
walls
itself to,
right. You don't have as much privacy.
For interaction,
But you have a lot more
There's
social.
No privacy. Uh-huh. But
so it's more like a big workroom.
Yeah.
And there are some offices.
Yeah, more like, except they aren't really cubicles because there's nothing dividing one space from another.
Okay, but you would
unless
have
it's
own,
furniture.
Your own desk and workspace and things like that. Uh-huh. So that just kind of lends itself to being more... You see people more,
right.
And there aren't walls dividing you, and everybody's not so isolated. So that probably is a difference. But then also, because we always seem to put technical services underground. They're always in the basement. You sort of have this disconnect with public services, as we're up there on the main floor dealing with people and students and phone calls and reference, and we're meeting the customers, and you all don't get that kind of interaction, which I think is kind of unfortunate. I think I would miss that if I were down there.
Well, I guess the people that are down there have been there for so long that they don't know what they're missing, maybe.
Maybe. Or they just prefer that.
Yeah. I know technical services, I think, used to be kind of looked down upon.
Really?
You know, like, why in the world would you want to be down there?
Be up here where the action is.
But I always liked it. So.
Well, I also feel that a lot of people who do reference, you know, generally really have no idea what all goes on in technical services.
I think most people think books just appear on the shelves.
Just appear magically, right. Well, I remember when I was in library school, cataloging was a required course. And in a lot of programs, it isn't anymore, which I think is unfortunate, because I learned a lot about reference from studying cataloging, about subject headings and trying to think like a cataloger when you're trying to answer that reference question. It was very valuable. So I think it's a shame that they don't require that course anymore. I found it very helpful. But I don't think I'd want to be a cataloger.
Well, one thing I enjoyed was you couldn't always accept a standard call number as being right.
Yes.
You had to look at it, and at least I knew, maybe because of my cataloging classes, but if something didn't look right, then I would go try to find a source to tell me what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is this point B76 when it should be T something? You know, would go.
Yeah, there are mistakes, and there's also a lot of subjectivity in cataloging.
Oh, yeah.
People think it's like, it's so regimented.
Definitely.
And it has to be this. It's still up to human interpretation.
Right.
And, you know,
absolutely,
you have these thousands of subject headings that you have to choose from, and how that call number is constructed. It is a science, library science.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of room for interpretation there, too. Just like doing your taxes.
Right. Oh.
Five people will do it five different ways, right? And while we're talking about underground, do you know any ghost or haunting stories? Have you ever heard any from anyone else?
I'm sure I have, but I really don't remember.
I got Jack Montgomery's story.
Yeah, and Crystal Bowling is also very interested in paranormal, but she worked here as a student for 4 years, I guess, and now she's been a staff member for at least three, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether she personally.
Well, I just learned, one of the stories I've heard was about the sub-basement, just strange noises and banging on a door. And I just learned from one of the interviews that used to be the ROTC offices.
Oh, really?
I can't remember what that stands for. Training Center, Officer Training Center. It's for college students who are going to go on to be officers in the Army.
Yeah.
And they had an artillery range in the sub-basement. So they were down there shooting guns in the...
I know, I never liked to go to the sub-basement by myself. I don't know that I ever did.
Yeah, so I'm awfully curious now to go down there and see where that was and, you know, find the bullet holes in the wall or something. That might explain some of the
David
noises.
Brunner, is he still here?
He is.
He would probably have some good stories for you. You won't? Okay.
I would love to talk to David Brunner. But so that was something I had not known about the artillery range, because this was the athletic building for this library.
Yeah, right.
So the basketball gym was over and in on the first floor.
Right.
Of Helm, we still have the jump circle in the middle and so on. And somebody else told me if you go up to the attic of Helm, you can see the numbers along the wall that were the section numbers of the bleachers. So those are still on the wall. Yeah, I'll have to go up and take a look at those. Anything else we have not talked about that you would like to add?
I don't think I've given you much information, but
you
I don't.
Have. You absolutely have. Everyone thinks that, but you have. Okay, I didn't ask you about your most interesting patron because you don't often get to interact
with them. Well, we don't often.
How about your most interesting, material that passed through your hands, a book or something you were processing or cataloging? Most unusual topic?
I don't know.
Okay.
There was a department head between Eunice and Connie,
mm-hmm.
Reg Laswell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody's told you
uh-huh.
his name.
He was the head of technical services?
Yeah.
And did he retire?
Yes.
Do you know when about? That's okay.
I don't know. He had AIDS. He was very ill.
Mm.
And
so he retired and then he died?
Yeah.
Okay. And was he here for a long time, do you know?
Several years. I was on the search committee that brought him here.
Oh, okay.
I've been on a lot of search committees.
Well, that's a story.
Nada would be a good source to tell you when he was here, I think.
Okay. Anything else?
I can't think of anything.
Okay, that's good. Well, I want to take this opportunity to thank you once again, Ann Brown, for sharing your time with the
You're
Western
quite
Kentucky
welcome.
University
I'm
Oral History
Project.
Not sure
Project. I had anything very interesting to say.
You certainly did. Thank you.